Jason Mercado has for Broadway theme this year.
The pen of the opera is here inside your mind. I got my badge at registration. No hesitation. Any badge will do. Don't laugh at that indie fur anthrocon. The truth is, Pendez isn't funny. Am I up yet? 30 seconds more. Oh, what can I do in 30 seconds? No, we're not going there. Don't make me laugh. I'm trying to think of something to do real quick. 10 seconds. All right, so if this is my last few seconds, I want to say thank you for putting up with my mediocre comedy, the set that was almost written last night. Please give a big, warm round of applause for the person you are really here to see, the one, the only, the chairman of AMC himself, Uncle Coggy! He's getting a different mic, right? Is he taking green or is he taking a different mic? Nice. Not that green.
Oh boy, it works too. That was Pendez, ladies and gentlemen. I want to hear it from again. Stage by our good friends from Sign Language Interpreting Professionals. I'm hoping that it is helping out there. Do you all like the sign we made?
Yeah.
That is the artwork of Tanya Dariel. A couple of years ago, I designed it, and I had my printing crew. I sent the art file to them, and I said, we need a new sign made up. It has to be ASL in sign language. And when we got here and opened the box, there was a sign that looked similar to that, but it had written in plain English, ASL in sign language. So I'm very, very pleased that I have a staff that is willing to do everything I tell them. Yeah. Incidentally, I'm joined on stage by a man that I am so very pleased to call one of my very, very best friends, because when I visit him, he's got really good wine. This is Fox and Moore, ladies and gentlemen. I have a whole list of stories that I was going to tell tonight, and I could, it depends on the timing. But we happen to have an honored guest. Mr. Flipnot has come to us from France. So I told him, yes, yes, that's here. I told him that in his honor, I would resurrect a story that goes back 20 years. It was 20 years ago this weekend this story was first told. And that is a tale of horror and dread and wine, which is good. It is called in French, Le Tourniquet, Mangeur d'Hommes de Paris. That is, the man-eating turnstiles of Paris. Those of you who've been around for a long time may remember it. I shall take you back in time to a long ago era. I was working at a different company, even a different field than I'm working now. I used to work in the pesticide industry, which seems a little odd for somebody whose persona is a cockroach. But why not? So I was told by the boss, who's named Dick. There are very, very few men out there that can honestly say that they can live up to their name. Anyway, Dick told me that a bunch of the senior scientists were being invited to the company headquarters, which was located just outside of Paris, in a little town called Plaisir. And I was very excited. I had not traveled internationally before. I was going to have the opportunity to see Paris. I went to see all the Paris sites. I was going to see the Eiffel Tower and the Tour Eiffel and all the great things. And also, I was looking forward to meeting my counterpart in the company from our European office. In those days, my counterpart was a gruff old Dutchman who worked in the Netherlands. I wanted to meet him because he had the greatest name in the world. His name was Peter Kool. You know, if you're going to be a gruff old Dutch scientist, you might as well have a name that's cool. I had spoken to Peter many, many times on the telephone, and I had been practicing my Dutch. I thought I would call him up one day and try out some Dutch. And look at me, I've been learning Dutch. I called Peter one day, and I said, Goedemiddag, je spreekt met Sam Coleman from Zurich in the U.S. And there was a pause, and he said, oh, Sam, I thought you were a Belgian. Which I guess is good, maybe. I don't know. I don't speak Belch, though. Anyway, so I was looking forward to meeting Peter. And also, I had been on Furry Muck for a while. Those of you elderly people remember Furry Muck. There was a French fur who also lived in Paris that I said, hey, we've got to get together. I'm actually coming to Paris. Now, these are the old days when everything was done by text on the computer. We didn't have these cell phones where you could immediately do stuff. But we made the arrangement. I told him when I was going to arrive, and he said, that's great. It'll be a Friday evening that I'm free. Come and meet me at Gare Montparnasse. Montparnasse is the great train station in Paris. If you've seen the movie Hugo, you know about Gare Montparnasse. So we all piled into an airplane and we jetted across the Atlantic Ocean to La Belle France. And Dick said to us, Dick, by the way, was from Boston. You could tell he was from Boston every time he opened his mouth. He said, yeah, I'm from Boston.
Massachusetts.
We were waiting for one of these large taxis that can seat about, you know, 8 or 9 people because we had a large party. The large part of the group sat in the back. The only seat left was the passenger seat next to the driver, so I took that. And before the taxi arrived, Dick told us all, now, you all let me do the talking. I speak French. And I said, well, okay, sure. You're the dick. You're the boss. We'll let you do the talking. I've got to watch that. I don't think he watches my videos, but he's not my boss anymore, so what the hell do I care? Anyhow. Well, we got the taxi, and everybody piled in, and I sat down in the passenger seat next to the driver, and Dick leaned forward and said, ah, nouveau drones à l'air à la Hotel Mercure. Keke is dying up here. And I said, oh, Jesus Christ. And the driver looked a little lost, and I said, shit. He said, oh, oui, merci. And Dick leaned forward and said, Sam, I didn't know you spoke French. I said, neither did I, till now. I had learned French years ago in school. I never thought I would use it. Incidentally, what I said was, you'll have to excuse the boss, he's a little drunk. We want to go to the Hotel Mercure, please. So we drove to the Hotel Mercure, and everybody there was like, oh, let's go do something cool. We're in France. Let's go do French things. So Dick took us all out for pizza. We had pizza. I'm in goddamn France, and we can have pizza. Didn't even have escargot on it. It was like pepperoni. on Eve. But there was one thing, that was very different. You know how when you go to the pizza joint, they've got the soda machine, and you take it and you go Sprite, Coca-Cola, Dr. Pepper. They had a machine, and it was Sprite, Coca-Cola, Dr. Pepper, Chablis, Pinot Noir, Pinot Grigio. I'm like, Vive la France! Well, I excused myself early because I had a date with a French furry. We were going to go out, we were going to paint the town red. So I told my colleagues I was tired, I was going to turn in or something, snuck out the back, and hopped a little train to Gare Montparnasse. Now, something I had not realized is that Montparnasse is a very, very large rail station. To say to someone, meet me at Gare Montparnasse, that's like saying, meet me in Pennsylvania. I got there and was looking all around for my friend, and I thought, this is crazy. I don't know how I'm going to find him. As I said, we didn't have cell phones back then. So I had his telephone number, and I found a payphone, and I called, and I got I guess it was an answering machine. It was an automated French voice. It was French. Beep! Okay, so I can speak French, but I can't hear it. That's the problem. So I left a message telling him, I'm at Montparnasse, but this is as big as a small European country. So I'm going to get back on the train. I'm at the Hotel Mercure. Why don't you just grab a train from Montparnasse? We'll go out there. Okay. So I went out, and I got back to the hotel, and I went to the bar, and I waited. I don't ordinarily care for French wine, but it's everywhere in France. I mean, you can't sling a dead cat without hitting wine out there. It's heaven. So I ordered some wine, and I sat and I waited. And I waited and waited and waited. And at one point, a man came in. You know the look of somebody who's here looking for someone. He came in doing this. Now, we didn't know what each other looked like, but I figured we'll play Spot the Furry, right? This guy comes in, and I'm sitting there. I kind of did this sort of thing. And he walked over. He was looking rather self-conscious. And he said, American? I said, oui? He said, what? I had already had a lot of wine. And he said, Conway. I said, oui, je suis de petit cafard. Which is, yes, I'm a little cockroach. He said, oh, I'm Peter Cole from Rotterdam. I said, oh, you're Peter. How nice. Do you speak French? He said, no. I said, oh, good. So I had a drink with Peter, and we got to talking, and a little while later, the friend came along, and I explained to Peter, of course, that, oh, here is an old friend of mine that I somehow know as text on the computer. But he was... Wait for it. He was cool with it. I've been waiting for years for that one. It really didn't work, did it? Sorry. Anyhow, I'll keep moving. That's good coffee. Where was I? France. Anyway, had a lot of fun with my friend. We went bar hopping down the Champs-Élysées. I don't know if it still is, but 20 years ago, there was a lot of bars in the Champs-Élysées. So we just went from one to the next, and then they all started to look alike. And then we kind of lost track of which bar we were. So we went and we started over just to make sure. I was a little bit... What was the word? Gone? Dead? Plastic, that's a good one. Ithronia. So, my friend took me back to Montparnasse. It was nearly midnight by this point, and he dropped me off, and I went staggering in to this monstrous, small, European country-sized station, and I was looking around. I had no idea where my train was. And I was trying to figure it out, and I was looking at the boards, and they were very confusing. So I found a station employee. He did not speak English, but he also didn't speak French. So we were on an even keel at that point. And I was saying, Hotel Mercure, parlez-vous, Hotel Mercure. He said, oh, oui, track 60. And I said, ah, oui, quelle heure? What time? He said, got it, thank you very much. 11:40. It was about 10:45 by this point. I realized that having consumed most of the wine in northern France, I had to find what the French call it, la salle de bain. that little room where you go. Anybody ever read The Little Prince? Antoine de Saint-Exupéry, a wonderful thing. He referred to le petit place où on peut être seul, the little place where one can be alone. So I was looking for le petit place. There is what I thought was a universal sign. I looked around, and there was a green sign with a man running for a door. I said, that must be in the bathroom. I went through it, and I was outside. Okay, I went back in, all the way around to the other side, to the capital of Montparnasse. And I kept looking, okay, if not that sign, we'll use the next universal sign. You know, the man and the woman standing very, very rigidly at attention next to each other? You know, they met. In those days, it was the man-woman sign, and that was sufficient. So I saw in the distance that man-woman sign with an arrow pointing ahead. Not a problem. I went marching straight ahead. And I got to the end of the concourse, which was 25 kilometers away, and the man-woman sign now pointed that way. So I turned right and I walked down another concourse, and there was the man-woman sign pointing this way. I went another 25 kilometers, and there was the man-woman sign pointing down a set of stairs. You've been there, right? Pointing, he's going, pointing down a set of stairs. I went down a set of stairs, very long, very narrow set of stairs, and there was a hallway that went on forever. Way in the distance, almost at the vanishing point, the entire hallway was pitch dark, but there was a little pool of light at the end, and I could see a door. By now, I really needed that little room to be alone. So I went speed walking down the hall, and I got there, and the door had a sign on it that with my rudimentary French, I could understand the hours. Hours, 8 a.m. to 10 p.m. This is why Montparnasse smells like pee all the time. So that's how I felt. I went out and I think, okay, what do I do? What do I do? Wait, when in Rome, drive like a maniac. What am I supposed to do now? But there was a little cafe. There was a cafe there. I was feeling urgency, and I was still quite inebriated. And I suddenly remembered. I'm an American. It's legal for Americans to be rude in Paris. It's expected. So I went up to the man at the bar, and I said, Monsieur, je suis American. Je suis off-pissé. Et j'ai besoin de votre salle de bain maintenant. Which is, sir, I'm an American, I am pissed off, and I want your bathroom now. And he said, oui, oui.
Oui, oui.
So, oh, Big! Hi! I didn't know you were coming. Good to see you, my friend. That's Big. That's Big, ladies and gentlemen.
Vic, we remember that. Yeah.
So he allowed me to use the little room. And when I came out, I looked at the clock. And I went to track 6. And I got onto the train. And the train began rolling out into the countryside. And it was very dark. And I was thinking to myself, you know, that entire time we were on the Champs-Élysées, I somehow managed not to see the Eiffel Tower. How did that happen? I don't know. Maybe something was in my eye. But as the train was rolling, as though the train conductor knew, I was looking out the window watching the countryside go by. And the train slowed and came to a stop. And it came to a stop. There was a break in the trees in front of me, framed perfectly, lit up like an angel was La Tour Eiffel, the Eiffel Tower, the symbol of France. I was enchanted. There it was, in all its glory, framed in that gap in the trees, and I was staring at it. Enchanted, and thinking, this is it. I am actually in France. This is incredible. Look at it. That's the Eiffel Tower. That's the symbol of France itself. It's right there. Right there. And it's still there. Shows you the route that it takes. I hadn't been paying attention because I'd been looking out at the countryside. And I saw that this particular rail line had a split at some point. Part of it went to the Parly-Doux area, very close to Versailles, which is where I wanted to go. And the other end went up, and there were no stations listed on that part. I thought, that's really strange. Why would that be? And I looked around the train, and it seemed to me that everybody was looking at me. That's what I was thinking. Oh my gosh. Are these cannibals? Am I going to cannibal territory? And we finally got to a station, and it was Parly-Doux, the station I wanted to go. So I jumped off the train, and there was a taxi queue. And I got in, and of course, my French is not good. The very kind gentleman says it is, but I know he's fibbing. I got in the taxi. Here it is, well after midnight. And here I am, obviously from out of town, and feeling more and more American by the moment as the wine was beginning to wear off. And I got into the taxi and I said, Hotel Mercure, s'il vous plaît. And the driver looked over his shoulder and in English said, do you know the way? And I said, yes. and don't fuck with me. We got there in record time. The next day, I woke up. I met my colleagues for breakfast. We were due to get to our destination for some time. They wanted to go off and do touristy things. I, for some reason, was a little tired, and for some reason, had a headache. So, I told them, I'm going to go ahead. I'll get there ahead of you, and it'll be fine. So I went back in the little commuter train, found myself back at Montparnasse, and I had to take a little commuter train to get out to the village of Plaisir, which is where I was supposed to be. And I was obliged to buy a little transit ticket. You put your money in, and the little ticket comes out, and you use that ticket to get onto the train. And I watched people, because I didn't want to look like a tourist. And the people went to these very complex-looking turnstiles. They're very secure. They had a turnstile with a steel door on the other side. And you would put your ticket in, go through the turnstile, take the ticket, and push the door open. I watched about 20 people do this. I wanted to get the rhythm down. So it's ticket, turnstile, ticket, door. I got that. Ticket, turnstile, ticket, door. I can do this. Ticket, turnstile, ticket, door. Tried to go back, the turnstile doesn't go this way. It's got me by the legs. The door is not opening, the turnstile is not going anywhere. I'm getting a little frantic. There's all these commuters surging past me. I didn't know what else to do. A lady came by, a business lady, and I said, Madame, s'il vous plaît, au secours, which is basically, get me the hell out of here! I watched her face. She was about to put her ticket in, and she went, stepped over, she went, ticket, turnstile, ticket, pushed me through the door, and kept on going. And I said, merci, merci, madame, vous êtes gentil, merci, pas touriste, non, pas touriste, non. But I got to the office where we were intending to go. And all of us sat down on one side of the table. And on the other side were our colleagues and friends. And a very, very nice lady came in with a pot of coffee. And she poured coffee into the cup in front of me. And then she stopped. She said, oh, and she grabbed it and ran away with it. And I was like, what the foot? What is this? And I leaned back. I watched her take the coffee pot into a little kitchenette. She poured half of it down the drain, poured hot water into the pot to dilute it about halfway, and then brought it back. Apparently, this is how French people think that Americans like their coffee. I hate to say they're right. I wanted French coffee. So, the meeting was good. It was a nice meeting, a good business meeting. Later on, I had a conversation with Dick, and I said, you know, I'm really very, very glad that you invited me to this meeting. I think that it gives me the opportunity to make a positive contribution to the department. And he said, well, that's really good, Sam. I'm glad you feel that way. What did you learn? And I said, I learned that none of those people thought anyone at that table could speak French. Let me tell you a story, I told him. Yes, if you're going to another country, always bring somebody who understands the language and don't tell them. You'll learn the most amazing things. After we finished in France, it was time to travel to the Netherlands, the home of Peter Kuhn. And we got on to the SNCF train, and we rode up to, first to Rotterdam, which is where the company's headquarters was. And after Rotterdam, we were to spend one more night in the Netherlands, and Dick decided we were going to spend that in Amsterdam. In Amsterdam, there is a little section of town colloquially known as the Red Light District. Dick very much wanted to go there, and he wanted to bring myself and my immediate boss. Dick was the boss, and my immediate boss. The three of us got there, and Dick said, "Well, we have to go see the Red Light District." I said, do we have to? I'm from Philadelphia. This is like, you know, this is like an elementary school for me. But Dick was insistent, and I actually learned it was not the same. It was not the same. In Philadelphia, it's all considered very, very sleazy. In Amsterdam, it's sleazy, but it's institutionalized. It's institutionalized sleaze. You go down these very, very tidy streets, and there are what look like storefront windows with a door next to it. Each one has a red neon light around the outside of the window. Some of them were lit and had usually a young lady in it in various states of costume, because apparently they owe something for everyone. There was one lady who was dressed as a bride. Sure, you're into that, okay. There was one lady that had a stack of school books and really thick glasses and a pencil behind her ear and nothing else. If you're into that, that's okay. One young lady was dressed as a cavewoman, this sort of like, you know, Betty Rubble looking thing. And I was wearing my best fedora at the time. And as we walked by, she looked out and saw us. She opened the door, ran up to me, grabbed my hat off my head, and said, "Oh, what a lovely hat. Why don't you come inside? We'll talk about your hat. Just 40 guilders. 40 guilders. We'll talk about your hat." And I was like, I kept looking at my boss and looking at Dick, and they're going, So I grabbed the hat back. I had to think fast. I said, thank you so much. Very flattered, extremely flattered. But I can't. I honestly can't because before I left the United States, I made a solemn and holy promise that I would only have sex 18 times in any day, and I've already had my 18. So she accepted that. Grabbed my hat back and I was looking at Dick. We went around the corner, and half of the lights were lit, but the other half were dark and the curtains were closed. That's a little unsettling, because I said, "Dick, there's Dutch people screwing in there." Dick said, "You want to see?" And I said, "Oh, I've seen it before. I've been here before." That's them down there. But there was a young lass. We went to a two-level place. They had balconies there. And this young lass was up there. She had on like an evening gown. And she looked down at me, and she did this. I said, and she said, so I turned to Dick and I went, and she said, and Dick looked rather shocked, and I said, "Dick, let me tell you something, a phrase that comes from my world. You don't fuck with Uncle Kage, okay? So, we wound up going to a street that had a row of stores. You might call them toy stores. So we went into one, and those of you who remember the story of my buddy Murray, it was very reminiscent because they had these things arranged like a big xylophone hanging up. Going from, you know, high F sharp all the way to B flat. Thank you. And Dick walked in and looked at it and said, "Wow, kind of makes you feel inadequate, doesn't it?" I said, "What for?" We went to the back of the store, and I said, "Okay, Dick, what are we doing here? This is the video era. They had videos in the back, VHS videotapes." And Dick explained, "Well, I want to find the most repulsive, disgusting sex video I can find to take back to the boys at my poker night." I said, "Really? That's the best story you can come up with? Okay, sure. All right, okay, what do we got here? Oh, all right, okay, how about this? Midgets on Ice." He said, "No, I've seen that one. I'm pretty sure. What's this one? Barnyard Buddies, Volume 4. He said, "That's a possibility. Let me get that there." Okay, great. And I turned and I looked over here and I went, "Dick, Dick, 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 come here." And he turned and he went, "Jesus fucking Christ, and we just got the hell out of there." Memory alone is enough to... I need more coffee. "No, I won't. Because then I'll have to think of it again."
Oh.
"Now, we stay in the night. I will tell you one thing, though. It was German." We spent our last night in Europe, in Amsterdam. And the next day, Peter drove us to the airport, whose name can only be pronounced by Dutch people. Foreigners, by Dutch law, are forbidden from attempting to pronounce the name of the airport. It's considered insulting. Whatever the hell it is, it's Dutchland Airport. So you went to the airport. This was the very, very opening years of 2002. It had only been a very few short months since those tragic events of a warm early autumn September day that we all remember very well. So security was quite intense. But they had gotten some very, very highly trained security agents dressed in black uniforms and wearing white gloves. Their job was they were searching every bag individually. No x-ray there. They were actually going through the bags. They were very polite. They were also very, very, very tall. This is something you need to know about the Dutch people. The Netherlands is situated primarily below sea level. So this is an evolutionary adaptation. If the dike should break, they'll be, you know, fine like that. That's true. That's science. You want to argue with a scientist? Go ahead, try it. Don't fuck with Uncle Kage, remember? Well, hang on, I'm going to see this. You don't fuck with Uncle Kage. What's Uncle Kage? Uncle? The sign for wine.
Oh.
and the kid. K1. I like it. And I promised my friends I wouldn't do that this year. Yeah, I suck, I know. So, the nice card's very, very polite, very deferential. Hello, sir, I would like very much to look through your suitcase. Is that all right? So, yes, absolutely. So, could you kindly put it on the table? Please, unzip. Yes, I'm going to search the suitcase. Is that all right? I said, yes, of course. That was more German, but anyway. So he's going through, he's making conversation. He's saying, oh, are you here on business or holiday? And I said, oh, it's primarily business, although we had to spend a little bit of time seeing the beautiful city of Amsterdam. You say, oh, yes, Amsterdam is very beautiful. Oh, I see you've been to the red light district.
Oh.
If you don't mind, the man behind me is my boss. He said, oh, but he has two. I'm like, there is more that happened in that trip. But as I said, it was 20 years ago, and I would actually have to go back and watch the video to remind myself of what happened. Although there are certain parts that I'm trying desperately to forget. So I've got a list of more current stories, but there was a file that I ran across that I think I would like to share with you. 10 years ago, very, very dear friends of mine and of many of you, Tani Darial and Night Fox from Germany, got married 10 years ago this year. Yes. They could not be with us this year at this convention. It made them quite sad. But in their honor, and because Night Fox begged me not to tell the story, I'm going to tell the story. They asked me to officiate at their wedding. Why not? I mean, who better to officiate at the wedding than a talkative old drunkard? But I'd never officiated a wedding before, so I decided I had to look up some religious texts. I had to look up one religious text and perhaps a second one. And I came upon the Book of Shnorf, chapters 28 and 29. And I would like to read to you now the passages that I read at the wedding of Tani and Night Fox. At the time, Night Fox was Western Germany's national sales manager for Jägermeister. They pretty much, the entire wedding was decorated in Jägermeister stuff. So I read chapter 28, beginning with verse 1. And it would be some church-type music here. You got any churchy music? You can get an organ going here. It's a furry commission. Of course you can get an organ. Anyway. There we are. And it was on the third day upon the mountain known as Bibamus, whereupon Jerithophat was to be wed unto Chloe, that a great sadness was upon the people gathered there. For the man who had been summoned to perform the wedding ceremony had consumed all of the wine and lay drunk upon the ground. And of wine for the people there was none. And the people therefore tore at their clothes and beat their breasts and did proclaim, "This sucks." Then a stranger did appear unto them, saying, "Take you this, the stomach of a sheep, and place into it some water, and you will witness a true miracle of God." The people did place water into the stomach of a sheep, as the stranger had told them. And when they drank of it, they were amazed to find the water was still water, other than it now tasted of sheep. And the people spake, saying, "What the fuck is this?" And Jerithophat did say, "Who the hell is this guy? Chloe, did you invite him? Not I, Chloe did say. And the stranger was cast out by the people with many pointy things and the gnashing of teeth. And as the people hung their heads in sorrow, at that time from the wilderness there did appear a fox. And all those who beheld the fox stood in wonder, saying, "Lo, it is a fox! How cute!" And the fox spake unto them, saying, "Be not unhappy, for behold, I bring tidings of great joy unto you." To which the people answered, "Holy shit, a talking fox! How cute!" Then the fox did produce a vessel which was made of green glass, and upon that glass there was the image of a sacred stag. And the fox spake, saying, "Take, drink, and be happy." And Jerithamat and Chloe did drink, and their hearts were filled with happiness. To the fox they said, "O fox, we are happy. May we have more?" And the fox said unto them, "Only the first one is free. After that, I'm afraid I must charge you, but I can make you a special deal if you sign a quarterly delivery contract for a minimum of 15 cases, and if you sign today, I'll throw in the chiller at no extra charge." I'll let you catch up to me. And Jerithamat and Chloe did sign, and all the people did drink, and all were happy forevermore. Amen. By the way, who here is happy to be back in Pittsburgh? Cheap way to get applause, wasn't it? I am very happy to be back in Pittsburgh, except there have been changes. There are some friends that we can no longer see. There are some institutions that are no longer there. These past few years were cruel to many, and in many ways. There was a place I liked to go to get wine. And that place has since come under new management. I'm still doing the church thing. And that place has since come under new management. But I thought, okay, it's still a place that serves wine. Why not? So I went in, and I was with two of Anthrocon's directors. So there are three of us. I have witnesses for this. We went in, and at the bar was a six-year-old girl. Or at least that's how she looked. Then again, to me, anybody under 45 looks like a damn six-year-old. Anyone under 19 is a fetus. Got that? So she put down her teddy bear and her Nintendo Switch, and she climbed up on the bar, and she said, "What would you like?" And I looked at the guy, I said, "Riesling? Riesling? Okay. Bring us a bottle of Riesling and three glasses." So she went off, and she came back with a bottle. She poured three glasses. One, two, and three. And then put the bottle of Riesling into the stone, the chiller. And I raised my glass. I turned to those two hardworking fellows, two of Anthrocon's very, very long-suffering directors, long-suffering because they got to work for me. I said, "Gents, here's to being back in Pittsburgh." And he took it. "What the hell? What is this?" And I pulled the bottle out. I had asked for Riesling. The label very clearly said, "Gewürztraminer." Okay. Gewürztraminer. I have to see what Gewürztraminer is. Okay. Gewürztraminer is a different kind of wine. It's not bad wine. In fact, I kind of like Gewürztraminer, but I was there for Riesling. It's like, you know how when you pick up a cookie and you're expecting chocolate chips and you bite into it and you realize it's raisin? No, it's still a good cookie, but this wasn't part of the contract. So the young lady came by again. I said, excuse me, miss, this is not Riesling. And she said, yes, it is. I said, no, I can assure you it isn't. And she said, no, that's Riesling. I pulled the bottle out. I missed this. This is a Gewürztraminer. And she looked at me earnestly, even perhaps a little pityingly, and said, Gewürztraminer is the same as Riesling. I looked at the other guys and I said, no, honestly, miss, I don't think it is. And she said, no, they're the same thing. And I said, I'm quite certain these are not the same wines, miss. It's a very different wine. And she said, would you like to speak to my manager? And I thought at that moment, oh my God, I'm a reverse Karen. Yes, actually, I would, as a matter of fact. And I just realized that I'm going to be in really freaking big trouble because I forgot who our honored guest was. Because the next line I was going to speak was, the manager walked up and you could tell without looking or without even hearing his voice that he was French. I'm really sorry, it's true. He was like a French billboard. Everything, he had a baguette under one arm, he had a beret on, a striped shirt, everything. Yeah, but he was like a poster child for Frenchness. And he came up and he said, I apologize. The bartender is not well educated in the wine. Of course, Gewürztraminer is not the same as Riesling. Would you perhaps prefer some Chablis? No. I said, no. What I really would like would be some Riesling, please. He said, we have no Riesling. Perhaps a Pinot. Now we're getting further and further away from anything that looks like Riesling. So I thought I should explain myself. I said, okay, what I'm looking for is something in the Riesling family. Let me tell you why. I prefer German white wines because they have a higher residual sugar content and a lower tannin content. And that's what I'm... As soon as I said that, I realized how badly I had screwed up. The very second I said German, his face just crumpled up like a ball of tinfoil. And he said, no, of course, that is correct. They have the higher residual sugar. And he went away. And embarrassed, I said to my friends, I said, wait, why don't we just pay the bill and get out of here? And, we did, and I left. Now, I had not seen something. I'm normally a very observant person. But one of the other gents told me something that I had not observed. Because apparently he had not just walked away. He had walked to the other end of the bar and spent the rest of the time glowering at me. So I simply decided, okay, this had been one of my favorite places for wine, but I'm just not going to go back again. How did my tie get to outside my lab coat? Excuse me. It's escaping. The buttons came undone and ran to me. Is my zipper up? Okay, good. Well, this story... That story, I hope, was at least mildly amusing to you. Since it is, I think, a somewhat funny story, I thought I would tell it to the nice ladies from Visit Pittsburgh. And I did. But they didn't laugh. They said, what place was this? They didn't have Riesling for you? I said, no. Did you get the name of the bartender? I said, Mr. French? She said, doesn't matter. We'll find him.
Sometimes it's good to be Uncle Gaga. One of the places, not here in Pittsburgh, but back at my home in North Carolina, that did not survive these dreadful years, was a wonderful little specialty wine and tea store called Ingenuity Tea. Again, it's Ingenuity Tea, as in T-E-A, tea. They had very, very lovely wine. They had kombucha, they had coffee, and they brought in the most exquisite blackberry cider that you can imagine. But I educated them about sake. Many of you know that I am extremely fond of sake, and those very, very darling fellows, Soku Kokoku, brought some. It's gone. But there was a lot of it. So if you saw me at opening ceremonies and I seemed kind of quiet, that's why. Anyway, this place allowed me to conduct some sake tastings. And I was very, very pleased to do it. Nice professional level tastings. The first one that I did, I thought, I'm going to need some assistance. I invited Alkali. Why? Alkali can be professional. But that evening, he decided not to be. I didn't realize that Alkali can get drunk. He apparently had not had anything to eat that day. And he started going through the sake much faster than the visitors were. And at the end of the evening, he was literally falling down drunk. Somebody had to carry him to the car. I think I can illustrate this right. Alkali Mad, borrow you for a second. Alkali Bismuth, ladies and gentlemen. Would you step right here, please? I want you all to imagine this man in such a state that he cannot walk a straight line or stay, and I had to try to get him to his, get to the car, so he could...
More booze!
Oh, no, 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 that's not booze, that's going, get, no, no, get, okay, get. I drive a Toyota, the door is this wide. That's true, this is true. How do you remember it happening?
Don't remember it happening.
There you go. Despite the best efforts of my friend and colleague, there were still some bottles left over. About a year later, I had another sake tasting. And after the sake tasting, we were going through the chiller. And the barman reached in the back and he pulled out a bottle from the first sake tasting. And it had been opened. And it was half empty. It had this big headspace of oxygen in it. And I said, oh, good Lord, this is gonna be a horror. And the barman said, well, what do you mean? And I said, look, sake is a very fragile beverage. It does not last more than 7 days once the bottle's been opened. This thing has been in there a year, opened. It probably has intellect by now. It probably has a Gmail login by now. So with great consternation and trembling hands, I opened the bottle and I poured it in. To my surprise, it didn't jump out of the glass. It hadn't discolored. It was actually crystal clear. And I put it to my nose. It still smelled good. I said to everybody, stand back. I took a taste. And I said, my God,
It's good. It's good. It is as good as Lee was open. It's a miracle. And the barman was staring at me. He said, what do you want about it? I said, this, call the Vatican. This is a miracle from heaven. This is an open bottle of sake, and it's lasted a year. And he said, well, it's been in the refrigerator. I said, that doesn't matter. Sake doesn't last more than 7 days once it's open. Everybody knows that. He looked me dead in the eye, and he said, when's the last time an open bottle of sake lasted 7 days with you around? Speaking about Eli Bismuth, he's lurking backstage, I happen to know that, and lurking back there too is a man who is one of the few people who is willing to say to me very loudly, Sam, stop talking right now! Don't put that in writing! Oh God, you're screwed. It is 7:30. I would like to invite to the stage, after thanking my most esteemed friend and colleague, Fox Amore. Please welcome the equally esteemed Alkali Bismuth, and the almost as esteemed, Dr. Boozy Badger, J.D., LLD, Esquire, etc.
So you're just assigning us stuff now, huh?
Well, assigning you stuff. I'm going to assign you stuff. I'm the chairman.
Fair enough. So, chairman, I need to ask you something. You've had to come out here in a chair for quite some time. You are a brilliant scientist.
Yes.
A logical man.
Yes.
I am unemployed and resourceful. You know you can just make tables. Science that, asshole.
Alkali Bismuth and Boozy Badger, ladies and gentlemen.